And welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. We're so glad that you are here with us. If you're joining us live, that is awesome. If you're joining us recorded, we love that. And we just want to thank all of our subscribers to our podcast and to our channels on YouTube and Facebook. We know that you guys keep coming back. We see the views, and we are excited to be able to share with you each week some encouraging words for your homeschool. And this broadcast is sponsored by Sped Homeschool, and you can check us out at spedhomeschool.com. But this month, the month of May, we've been focusing on outdoor learning because we're all going to be getting outside if we aren't already with our kids. And we just want to encourage you to make that enriching experiences. And so tonight, my guest is Michael Brooks. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm excited to have you here tonight as we wrap up this month on outdoor learning. And just so Michael sent me 2.5 pages of content. And so he's got a lot to share. And so I'm really excited about that. But we would love to incorporate just questions or comments you have. I know we've been talking about this topic over the month, and maybe it's brought up some things. Well, how do I get around this obstacle? Or what do I do when, you know, my child has this challenge, or we want to build in this type of learning, but I'm not exactly sure how to do that. Well, we would love to be able to help you kind of think through that too. And so anyways, I just want to encourage you to join in on the conversation and put in the feed where you're from, and just, yeah, we would love to know who you are and a little bit about you as well. So, so on that note, Michael, we would like to know a little bit about you and, you and your family and your business and just, outdoor learning and, what has outdoor learning been to you, personally? So I'll just kind of leave you with all of that.
Right. Well, thank you, Peggy, for the opportunity. This is a new experience for me, so I appreciate just the opportunity. My name is Michael Brooks. I am the title is something like Director of Operations for Winter Promise. And what that means is I get to really oversee the day-to-day operations work inside the curriculum quite a bit. I grew up, my parents started Winter Promise back in the early 2000s, and it's been going on now for about 20 years, and that's been very exciting. So I grew up in the homeschool world. I was homeschooled all but like 2 grades, and then really started getting involved in, I mean, I was even shipping out boxes in middle school. So I was involved at the ground level and really appreciated my homeschool experience, the uniqueness. And I really hated all of the labels that get attached to homeschooling because it just wasn't true. Right. So anyways, after graduating high school, I went to college in Louisville, Kentucky. I didn't finish my degree there. I was pursuing a Bible degree, actually, and wanted to serve in the local church. And then I lived in Michigan. My family moved around a whole bunch. So anyways, we ended up back in Michigan. That's where my grandparents are. So it feels like home. So I ended up getting married, and we have 3 kids now, and 5, 3, and 6 months. So things are, busy. Yeah, very busy. So, but in that time, my family reached back out to me, seeing I was kind of between where it felt like the Lord was going to take me and where I was at the time, and said, hey, we'd love to bring you in for, we want to grow social media and marketing, and we need mobile customer service and dedicated employee. And I was like, well, sure. You know, and then it's grown into this role that I love. And I love education. I love serving kids. And education is so much more about than just getting knowledge in a child's head. Yes. It's really about discipling the person, being another piece in their discipleship story, hopefully, that the Lord does in their life. And so education can be such a freeing experience. It's not the answer to everything, but it is such a key tool for a child. And so I love all things education. And what's really cool, Peggy, I'm really excited to share kind of this two worlds coming together. So I've been in the homeschool world, love homeschooling, value it, love homeschoolers. Mm-hmm. But we actually launched a private school on our campus where we're at to serve the second poorest county in the state. It's called Northern Discovery Academy. And what we did is we took everything we love about homeschooling and said, well, let's keep the school small and do that for families that can't homeschool. That was one of the inspirations.
Oh, that's
great. And so I get to see not only do I know, well, how does an individual family handle this, but we get to see the benefits to even groups of 6 and 8 and 10 and 12 students and outdoor experiences. I mean, when you told me this, our campus is on a 10-acre campus. So we have we're right on the edge of a national forest, the Manistee National Forest here in Michigan. We are, this is what Michiganders do. We're like right here.
Okay,
so,
yep.
so we get to take it. We take advantage of every single day, the outdoor experiences. And so plus, just in writing in our curriculum for the last 20 years, outdoors, a big part of what we do. So we love what God's made and getting kids out there.
Well, that's exciting. Yes. And homeschooling isn't the perfect choice for everybody. And so I'm glad that you pointed that out, and especially for low-income families that, that just have to have both parents working and some of those solutions. And so, so that's awesome. 10 acres. You can do a lot on 10 acres.
Yeah. There's a lot of space. We love it.
That's so cool. So, so this month we have been focusing on outdoor learning, and I know we've talked a lot about the benefits, but even if some of my previous guests have covered some of the things that you have to share, or I'm sure you have new things too, but it's just good for us to hear this over and over again. Cause I think I find myself just stuck inside and going, I need some motivation to get me out there. and sometimes kids are motivation enough to get us out the door because we're like, you're driving me crazy in here. Yes, exactly. I think one of my guests said, well, just kick him out the door and lock it. So, but what, from just what you've seen and experienced, what are some real benefits that we as parents can have within us just to motivate us to get more outdoor learning experiences incorporated into our days and into our schooling experiences?
Yeah, great question. When you had Peggy reach out to me, I was thinking this is a great topic, but I wonder how many of us just assume the benefits without really thinking through them. Mm-hmm. Something people quite often in life, and I found this about myself, what you know, you don't realize you could know a lot better. There's reasons why you think things, and actually the reasons behind your thinking, if we can clarify them, actually make why you think something even more powerfully believed and known. And so I was just thinking, well, what are the assumptions behind, but also empirical research? And so there were just, I threw out a list, and of course, if anyone of your viewers would like access to what I'm in a written form, I can edit. It needs some editing. I said to you to give you a heads up. It needs some editing, but we can make sure we make this available. But really, one of the big things that I think is assumed, and maybe it's like, well, we kind of know this, but is a different context helps a lot. So if you're ever looking for, you're doing your language arts, you're doing your spelling, you're doing your math, you're doing your science, you're doing something that's normally done indoors. I mean, even just writing. A different context alone, it's been shown and proven to bring creative benefits. So quite often in workspaces, we've all been working at home, unfortunately, many of us, not all, many, feel like we've been working at home way more than we should or want to. Mm-hmm. They've shown that, well, if you stay in one place and you aren't changing locations, your creativity is actually affected by that. Just simply the different context. If we think about, well, an adult is trained to focus more just through life experience. A child doesn't have that training, especially the younger and younger you get. That's part of education and parenting and discipleship. We're helping them. A different context can be just freeing for a child. And I'm going to touch more on this. The outdoors, God's made us. By and large, there are, of course, exceptions, but almost every child just loves being outside more than inside. The great exception is maybe a screen, but if we can break that connection with the screen, what we find is most kids love being outside. So just simply different contexts. And I think that's kind of the most simple reason, but that alone, and I'm going to talk about it later, it's sometimes just as simple as doing what you normally do, but outside. And that suddenly changes everything. Another benefit is that being outside is more active by nature. You aren't just able to do this, you know, as you're reading. You have to sit carefully, you know, kids, especially girls, but sit more carefully so they're more actively engaged. They have more space to roam, so they're going to be able to just move around more. Okay, so more activity plus more of the senses are engaged. I feel stuff on my legs. I feel now some students may be bothered by that, so you have to work with that. Yeah. Some children can be like that sensory contact you have to work with, but even just the sunlight, the air, the breeze, the sounds, that all creates to a more engaged student. When there's clear research shows that if you engage more senses in a learning process, the learning process becomes more of a memory. And this is what's important in learning and in education, is that you actually want to make memories, because what you remember best is what you attach a memory to. Yes. And outdoor experiences are much more naturally turned into a memory. Oh, I tripped and fell, and I fell in this mud. Oh, we all laughed about it. That creates a memory, and certain things stick. Okay, that's more of a light example. So that's a reason. There's research that they called it nimble thinking. I thought this is an interesting use of the word. Nimble thinking is promoted. So problem solving, dealing with a different environment while you're learning, you have more, your brain has to do more than I'm sitting at a desk and I'm writing, or I'm sitting at a desk and talking. It's a controlled environment. I don't have to engage. It's like, you know, we sleep in our bed. It's our most relaxed place because we're used to the environment. Well, you get students into an environment that's different, not stressful, but different. It gets them thinking, even though they don't know it, their brain is engaged and it promotes nimble thinking. There's obviously physical health benefits, but this is something that is close to my heart. And viewers may have a different opinion on things of who's created the world, if there's a God and whatnot. But I believe that God's created all of us, and we all, the reason we love nature is because God's made a world for us to love. And there's empirical research that also shows that simply being outside is beneficial to the person, I would say to their soul, the holistic benefits of being outside. And if you can use education to bring those holistic benefits, that's going to benefit education, but also the child, and the child is what matters, not just education like it's a project. The last couple that I would mention is that there's outdoors are the foundation of the sciences. If you aren't promoting, I mean, people, our society talks about STEM everything, STEM this, STEM that, STEM this, STEM that. But we're all stuck inside because we all want to be programmers, supposedly. Actually, to get kids STEM oriented, get them outside in the dirt, get them outside with the bugs, get them outside in the trees, get them tromping around the snow. And then we love Charlotte Mason at Winter Promise. We are inspired. Everything we do is inspired by Charlotte Mason. And she was a big proponent. Their curiosity. Lifelong learners are curious people. Students are naturally curious, and at some point that changes. Well, the goal of a good education is that we don't let that change, we let that increase. And being outdoors invites investigation and curiosity. So that was just a list of things that I thought behind the assumption of why it's good to be outdoors. Those are just reasons why.
I never thought about, you know, we had a whole broadcast on creating a sensory diet for your child, and just how being outside activates so much sensory things that you don't even have to plan it. And I think some parents get like so overwhelmed with, you know, I've got to create these sensory experiences for my child. And when you brought that up, I thought, well, okay, we just put them outside. I think we've got the sensory diet covered quite a bit. And
the most natural sensory diet.
Yes. When you brought up putting kids in the dirt, I remember just taking my kids camping and just allowing them to get as dirty as they wanted to every day, because I knew they'd take a bath at the end of the day, when they got into bed, they'd be clean, but you know, they're washable. Why not take advantage of that? So yes,
exactly.
Definitely. And then connecting with stories, you know, just we are a story society, and marketers talk about that all the time, but just that connection you talked about with having different scenarios and experiences, we come back. Those things that really trigger things in our brain are those stories, those experiences that we have. And what better place being outside? You create a lot of very funny and memorable things while you're outside. So
exactly.
That's awesome. So, you know, what about learning experiences themselves? How do they serve a wide variety of learning needs within just like general outdoor experiences or more particular outdoor experiences, but just, you know, in general, what can we as parents know that these learning experiences are bringing? I guess I'm talking too much. I'm going to let you talk.
I think I know what you're asking. So I think, and I'm going to, I want to come back to this. This is something that we believe strongly at Winter Promise, is that parents have so much going on. I think parents bring the idea that we have to structure everything and plan everything and make it fit this perfect little, you know, path to victory for us, whatever that goal
is. Put on that lesson plan and meet that goal.
Exactly. It's got to go, you know, it's either linear or some crazy graph or whatever it is. It's got to fit. What actually I want parents to get out of this, the one thing I would want is that I want you to strategize, not feel like you have to plan templates and things and whatever. I want you to strategize. What I would say is that there's been a lot of research in the last 30 or 40 years, but really it's really growing. The idea of multiple intelligences is important in education. Finally, as a society, even though we're not learning then how that changes our education, usually in these bigger institutions, we are understanding that a simple IQ test does not measure every student accurately, that intelligence can be measured in different ways, in a whole host of different ways. Intelligence can. So based on that science and research, I think the outdoors, instead of thinking, well, I need to create an experience for this kind of learner and then an experience for this kind of intelligence, an experience for this kind of intelligence, actually what you need is what happens is that, Peggy, in talking to you before the broadcast, you're clearly a very intelligent person. But very likely, your intelligence, you have about two or three major ways that when you are involved in a learning experience, you're going to remember different things to different degrees, and other things are just going to drop away, but two to three ways are going to rise to the top. Usually what you want to do is not aim for, hey, I have a hands-on learner, so the only way this student can learn is I need a hands-on experience. Actually, you have a hands-on learner, but you have other intelligences going on within that, and what you need to provide for your student are as many different kinds of learning experiences as possible. When you're in a room, it's the same goal, except you're more limited, I think. Outside, you can actually create tons of learning experiences that are different and easy for you to do. They're not, you know, planned for an hour and a half for 20 minutes of learning experience. It's easy to do, and I'll give some examples, but what it does is it empowers you to create a whole bunch of learning experiences in the freedom of the outdoors already for your learner. Whatever kinds of intelligences they possess uniquely, you can provide a variety of experiences that tap into those two or three primary dominant areas. And maybe one teaches something a little bit better than another, but because you're bringing them together, you're covering your bases in a really enriching way. So I would say that getting your kids outside is going to create an easy way to do this. I'll just give some examples. We all have independent learners. We call them these independent, just there. My daughter's three, and she is one of the most independent, stubborn, I need my place and my home. She's one of those people. We all know, many of us have children that at least have some component of that. A lot of times birth orders, funny how that works out.
Yeah.
But think about if you're outside, your child has more space, more opportunity to explore and investigate in a very independent way. So the student that needs their own control, their own thoughts, their own time, their own way, a lot of times it's all about just doing it their way versus another person's way. They can do that, and you have the space to allow them to do their thing, usually safely, at a distance, feeling like they have their sovereign territory. They've got some control over something, and they can experience and excel and enjoy that freedom. And then you can rein them back in. And because they have an outlet for that independence, they actually value that experience more, which means they tune into what you're trying to get across. As an example, one of the great ways, simple things, is you can study trees all day long very easily. And you can actually measure, like, you can think, well, how old is a tree, by figuring out what kind of tree it is. And then two, by like just simply measuring the tree. And so when you do that, you can give a child, I mean, almost any age, either help them. They get the space to say, I can go to this space, look at the tree. We can measure around it, measure how tall it is. We know what kind of tree it is because we did the little tree finder book. And they have their space to do that. The opposite, let's say a person that learns through conversation, not hearing the lecture, but through conversation. Yeah. That's me, actually. I learn best. When I read a book, I need to talk about it. I need to talk about it so you can exchange back and forth. The community learners, they can be given a team to work with, whether they're a leadership personality or not. They can work with a team. And if the parent just steps away, and Charlotte Mason says this a lot, teachers love to naturally encroach and direct, versus we should let the students kind of trial and error, figure out, and eventually it's going to get to where we want them, or they're going to learn something better that we didn't have in mind. So if you step away, step away. As a teacher, teachers love to talk. That's why teachers get into it. That's why I'm a talker. I'm filling up like all the time at this point. We want to talk and control and push, and parents have such a passion to care for their kids. We love our kids more than anything. We need to step back. And the outdoors allow a community experience where we can step away and give them freedom, whereas in a room, the kid kind of knows you're always listening. Yeah. And that's not quite just us talking. You can give them that community experience. And that's a very general way. You don't have to come up with a genius idea. You just go and do it, and yet there's still all that benefit happening. A few others, fidgeters. I call them fidgeters. I think a lot of people are going to say ADHD, or one extreme is everything's ADHD. Another extreme is they're just boys, or they're just kids. Whatever the case may be, I call them fidgeters. Busy children that need lots of engagement, lots of stimulation. And actually ADHD kind of has two expressions. It's interesting. Some kids are overstimulated and need calm. Other kids need stimulation to stay focused. Isn't that interesting? But fidgeters, busy, needing the stimulation, that harkens back to what I was saying earlier. Being outside engages everything. Even them just sitting, they're engaged. They can fiddle. They can, I don't know how many times we've taken kids out and read in a circle and on our property, and 70% of the kids are, if you ask them, hey, what did we just read about? Even though they never looked up, they would know it, because why? They could dig around with a stick, you know, and pull up this piece of grass. Kids are always doing this with the grass, you know, and because they're busy, and because they can do it in a way, it's like, you're not coloring on my wall. You're not destroying my furniture. You know,
exactly.
It turns out to be a great experience, and fidgeters then can be told to do something that's constructive, like, hey, go find this, and they can go explore and dig, and they find what they're looking for. They remember it because they had to go explore this, and they had to dig under this thing and pull it out, and oh, I had to find this kind of insect, or I had to find this kind of plant. Or, you know, whatever it is, or, hey, I found this. Is this comparable to what we're talking about? They form the experience, and they have the freedom and the ability to be fidgeters. But I did want to speak to calm learners. This is, as I've gotten older, I appreciate more calm in my life. my son, is very much a person that needs calm at certain points. I'm not sure if it's always in learning. He's very focused when he's learning, but I know this is a person. And so if you have a student that just needs calm and needs peace and needs an environment that isn't overstimulated, traditional classrooms are very busy. Some students need a lot of stimulation. Too many colors. It's just like, you know, epilepsy warning should be on the wall. It feels that way sometimes. No knock to people that love that. If your homeschool room is like that, that's great. Kids, there are a lot of kids that love that. But there are students that are like, I need calm. I need soft-spoken voice. I need a space to do that. And we have to teach them to be resilient and that it's not always going to be that way. But we can also provide a context where it's funny, even though there's all that sensory going on. How many adults are told to go take a walk in nature just to calm down? How much more does then a kid need it who can't handle all their emotions? So anyways, calm learners benefit. Get them away from maybe some other kids. Give them a chance to sit down. Maybe they're having trouble with a spelling word and they're having trouble with their writing assignment. Give them their notebook. Let them sit down outside. And sometimes magic happens.
Well, there's something about the natural sounds that that don't trigger that same anxiety or, you know, that same sensory experience as when you hear sounds that are much more human induced. So like chirping of birds, the wind through the grass, all of that is in water going on a brook. You know, those are the types of things, you know, they make apps for that. so that we can listen to them to calm down. And so there you have those naturally. And so that makes a lot of sense that would be beneficial to those kids that are needing that as well. And it just naturally provides that for them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, I mean, God made the original calm app, and it was the world. So, you know, I think it's important. I think it's surprising. I think when I think outdoors, I think adventure, I think excitement, but actually there's a lot of calm there. And the last thing I wanted to mention, there's a lot of, I would call them traditional learners, language learners, so they hear and they can just regurgitate because they just hear it, they understand it, they can then write it down. They love words, they love hearing spoken, very traditional. They'd be very successful in a lot of learning experiences. Language learners still, though, need all of their other senses engaged to get the most out of an experience. Sometimes I think traditional learners are underserved because we assume, hey, you're doing great in your room alone. In your room alone, you're doing great. We don't need to worry about you. I got to worry about the other kids. Which, no, of course, we have low maintenance kids, and God gives us those kids for a reason. We need the extra time. But don't sleep on the traditional learner either.
Very good point.
Let them go outside and do their traditional thing outside. Or maybe stretch them so that they realize, wait, actually, I do like the idea of getting in the dirt a little bit more instead of just hearing about it, you know? So that's something I wanted to mention. I think traditional learners, because they're so naturally successful in our American idea of education, which does serve, that's why we call them traditional, it serves those kinds of learners. There's still great opportunity for them as well.
Well, and it stretches them too to try some different modes of learning that they may find a lot of joy in. So,
absolutely,
give them that ability. So, we have a question from a viewer, and I'm not sure if we've got the whole question. So, I'm going to bring it up and ask it. Miranda asks, "How about with a special needs child?" So, that's a pretty broad question about, you know, working with special needs child. You know, we could talk about wheelchairs outside, you know, making spaces accessible. I know that's an issue with some of my siblings, and we have even gone camping. My parents have made that possible. But it just takes sometimes a little extra planning to get kids outside that have mobility issues. But I think you covered a lot of things, Michael. You know, just with ADHD and kids on the autism spectrum too, have a lot of sensory issues. And so, did anything else come to mind?
Yeah. Just recently popped in my head. And again, Miranda, I don't know the special needs. You could be speaking physically, could be a mental, could be a diagnosis that's maybe not, that just puts them in a certain specific category. But it just reminded me of a story. I was at the playground with some students, some kids, and another class actually came because we were in a public playground and just a park, and all the students went to play, and this kid was in a wheelchair, and there was a teacher, must be a teacher aide assigned to him, and she asked him what he wanted to do, and they were talking, and it looked like they had a great relationship, which I thought was awesome to see. And what there was a track around the park, and he wanted to be pushed around the park. And he told her to run. And I was like, well, there's the rest of the day. I don't know what the specific need is, but I do know Peggy's absolutely right. More planning is involved. What's going to stress your student out to the point that you can't actually achieve what you're trying to do? But I think all those things I mentioned actually speak to children. If you can just plan for just a few minutes, well, what are the things? And again, it's not about one specific thing. It's really about knowing your child, which you know better than anybody.
Right.
Strategize. Exactly. Don't say, what's the one thing? Say, hey, my kid wants to be a NASCAR driver. So I bet if we flew down a trail safely or around a park, that would just engage, and then had a conversation after. Say, hey, what did you notice? What are things you saw? What did you see? And then you're going to laugh and have a conversation, create that memory. And then if you tie it into something you're learning, let's say you're studying weather or some biology, and you can talk about the plant life, all those things come into play. You can talk about the bugs that you encountered hitting your face. And those are all things that, how is my child going to enjoy the outdoors? That's the first thing. How is my child going to enjoy the outdoors? Then the learning happens. It's not learning and then enjoyment. It's enjoyment and then learning happens. That's the best I can add to it.
So. Oh, yeah. That's a very good point. When we find ourselves in a place of joy, it's like our guard goes down. And our kids are the same way, that they can just like be in the experience instead of just... This is, and especially for our struggling learners, there's so much stress and so much, requirements that they feel like are being heaped upon them. I've got to do good. I've got to learn this. I'm not, they know I struggle with this, or, this is something I've got to get better at. And no matter how hard we try as parents not to make that feeling happen, they know that they struggle. And so to get them in a place of enjoyment, that is truly a place to start fresh and to get them in a whole new place to start learning happening. I think we talk a lot about that when we talk about de-schooling too, is just to take the traditional environment out and realize that learning isn't a classroom. It isn't, it isn't always out of a book. It's experiences like you've been talking about, and going back to how do we naturally learn. So so you talked a little bit about strategies, and what are some strategies that you have for parents, or what would you suggest for just getting outside more and enjoying those learning experiences?
Yeah, I would. This is always a big question. So nature learning, I think every grade, every subject, everything that you do, I think nature learning should be sought to be included in as part of that. Now, obviously, weather plays a part, where you're from, region, time, all that space. But I do think it's so important because of all the things that we've talked about that I think it should be sought to be a part of it. Now that can be overwhelming. I think most parents would go, what? I can just getting them outside once is stressful enough. And I get that. So I want to speak to a few different parents. When I think of this, I want to think of parents in my mind. And I want to speak to that. And then we can talk more big picture, and then maybe some specific ideas.
That sounds
But
great.
again, there are tons of resources on specific ideas. So that's why I wanted to say more about, well, how do we as people, as educators, as parents, think about it? And less on specifics, because there's tons of resources, but then I'll talk about things that I think are easy to do. So to the parent that's overwhelmed by my suggestion that natural learning, nature experience should be sought to be a part of every subject, I want to say, you don't have to do it. That doesn't mean every hour, every day. It really is.
That's a very good point. Thank you.
It's not like, okay, next time, now back outside. And then all everyone's like, okay, you know, that's not what I mean.
Getting heat stroke.
You don't want to make it stale. You don't want it just to be like, oh, well, that's what we're doing. So that's why we strategize. But it's really an attitude. That's what I would say. If you truly value getting your kids outside, my wife and I talked about this year, just as parents, we want, whenever it warms up, we always talk about, well, we want to be outside more. Quite often what happens, just like New Year resolutions, it's like, and then it
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So it's really about developing an attitude. And so the first thing I'd say is start simple and strategize about what is the best time of day, what works for us. You're a unique family with unique needs, unique schedule. So just start, what works for you? It's not about, well, what works for Michael, some guy I saw on a, you know, on a really cool broadcast, but what works for us in our real situation? And so if you really value it, the best thing to do is start small so that you value it more and more. You value it not just here, but you value it in here.
Right.
So if you start small, you can achieve it. So I'd strategize. Don't restrict. Don't say, well, it has to look like this. It has to look like what your family needs it to. So that's what I would say my first advice to the overwhelmed parents, like, oh, my goodness. So if you are new to this or it's a new part of what you want to do, just start small. Ask your kid what they love to do outside. More than likely, you can marry up what you're trying to teach with what they love. Again, we assume and think a lot of times versus asking. I do that a lot with my kids, where I should just be asking them what they think. So try to marry those things up. If a kid isn't excited, chances are they're not going to be really engaged, no matter what it is, whether it's outside or not. So that was my first. And Peggy, you're in Texas, right? You in Texas?
Houston.
You live in Texas? Okay.
Yes.
So Texas is warm. I'm in Michigan. We're in Michigan. We get all four seasons fiercely. So sometimes it's like, going outside is the worst. Like, I remember the great memories of sledding and all this stuff outside when I was a kid. I think it was a parent. I was like, that's exhausting. It takes me 30 minutes to get them in the snow gear.
Right. Then you're they can't move.
Outside for 20 minutes when you're coming back in. Yeah, because you can't even get outside. So enjoy warm weather. That's my first. Everyone loves, most people enjoy the sun. Even if they don't love it as much as others, they can learn to love it. Get outside, enjoying the warm weather. And if you can't get outside, okay. Don't guilt yourself. Parents have enough guilt. Children deal with enough guilt. Don't guilt yourself. Start with warm weather. So, so to the parent who's an overachiever, says, I've done everything, and I feel like it's getting old, and I feel like it's, you know, we've done it before. We've done this, which maybe there's not too many of them. Maybe they're the champions we all hope that we would be someday.
Exactly.
My challenge to them would be maybe you need to think about just changing what you normally do in a different place or a different time, or take your traditional subjects and do them outside. Okay. If you love being outside so much that you're like the champion overachiever that we all wish we were.
Right.
Do your writing assignment outside. Have them sit on a stump, have them sit in the grass and write. You know, if you're so good at math, I'm doing math outside. Practice math facts if you're younger. Maybe, you know, you've got high school students who's doing geometry and you have all those theorems that they've got to memorize, you know. Maybe have them do it while you're walking around outside. That's another simple way that we think, oh, well, you're just kind of doing the same thing. But then all those other benefits, all the other senses, the nimble thinking,
Right.
the engagement of the whole person, the physical activity, all come into the learning experience. Plus, bonus, when you're on a walk, conversations happen very naturally. So you might actually find that, we didn't cover theorems, but I had a great memory with my child that really reinforces to them the value of fill in the blank. So even if you're an overachiever, maybe it's the opposite. Maybe it's slow down and just be like, okay, I'm a naturally amazing person at overachieving. Maybe we just need to slow down and leverage that ability to maybe just having more conversations with your kid and getting them into a relaxed environment outside. So that's kind of how I would start. And then I would think of like, what are some specific examples that are easy to roll out? Because I think most of us are like, ugh, I'm just not sure. And I just wanted to throw those out there as we get closer to the hour. Peggy, I was thinking, this is kind of, I'd mentioned, I really think it's amazing. We send our kids out, and I did this when I was homeschooling, just be able to do things outside. Bring out your textbook. Hopefully you don't have a textbook, but whatever book you're learning from or whatever experience you're having, just take it outside, doing science outside. We actually had a tick explosion in Michigan this spring. We all so every time our kids go outside, we've got to like brush them down and check them out.
Wow.
But it was kind of cool. I sent that article to one of our teachers and they said, hey, we actually read this for science and they were outside doing it. And so they could all then connect, hey, this is something happening in real life in my life right now in my state.
Right.
Do it outside. We can look around, see if we see any, and we can practice what it looks like to be responsible. So it's just really simple. You just read an article about tick explosion, and it leads to a foundational scientific curiosity.
Right.
And it happened outdoors. Really simple. So if you do it inside, I challenge you, you can do it outside.
Yes.
And so find a way to do that.
Yeah. Well, thank you for covering the spectrum of parents, because I think, you know, we fall into either that I'm not an outdoorsy person. I don't even know how to get my kids outside, and I'm feeling guilty now because we've been talking about this for a month. And, you know, just starting with those small things like you were talking about, and just doing what you can. And yeah, changing up the environment by going outside, even if you don't have a whole lot of spaces, you can sit on a blanket in your front yard or go to a park. If you don't have a yard, if you live in an apartment, there's just pack up the car and do that. But then there are those of us that are overly extreme in everything we do. And I include myself in that category. And to the point where I think I drove my kids crazy of being outside and doing things. But it's funny that you brought up the conversation thing, because we hike a lot and we hike long, and our kids hate it. And so, but one thing we found that kept the hiking going is we started having them tell stories. And so we had different family members could pick one thing. So there was three things total. And then one of the family members had to tell a story, including those three items, while we were hiking. And the time went by, everybody laughed, and, you know, they were writing.
That's awesome.
And we were able to get in those 5-mile hikes without as much complaining. So, yeah.
That's a good idea right there. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. We had to be creative.
Well, it's creativity. See, problem solving, saying, what do my kids love? I think that's awesome. I think nature journaling, whether you're an artist or not, is a big, big thing that is helpful. And it's not about being a great artist, though artistic kids love it. It's really about the skill of observation and the skill of saying, I'm going to learn about something through watching. The most basic science that was done for up until the scientific method that was a little bit more involved because of technology took off in the 1800s. The most basic method of science was, let's go somewhere, let's do something, and let's see what happens. Okay. So even nature journaling, which or nature drawing, a journal, write what I see or talk about what I see verbally or writing it down, or nature drawing in terms of let's actually try to represent what I see. What they're doing is they're mm-hmm. learning a skill of observation, which is really the foundation of just being a responsible person on top of the sciences. Right. But it really gets them involved in learning experience that gets them say, I need to think outside of myself mm-hmm. and just observe mm-hmm. something. And I have to sit yeah. and I have to watch. Mm-hmm. And what ends up happening is kids generally enjoy it quite well, whether artistic or not. And so I would say that's another easy way to say, hey, I can't think about getting spelling outside. Okay. I would even have trouble uh-huh. saying, how do you spell outside? But
right.
I can say, instead of letting you just hang out in the house, run around between subjects, I'm going to give you a pad of paper. I'm going to tell you to sit here and look at, find something to observe, whether it's a tree or the sky, or there's, you know, birds. Birds are everywhere, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. I was thinking of the family in the apartment. We think that there's almost no green space. Insects mm-hmm. are tiny. Their world is yeah. small. You could find uh-huh. a plot of grass outside your apartment. You could observe that thing all year. You can get some magnifying glasses and observe and find. You can get these bug catching things that we use in our various curriculum. You can just catch the bugs and observe them. That doesn't need to happen in this big sprawling meadow like Jurassic mm-hmm. Park for bugs. It can happen. Right. Jurassic Park for bugs is your 3x5 front lawn out of your apartment. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's right. it's nature offers so much opportunity if you just look mm. for them. And that's why I say strategize, don't restrict. Use what you've yeah. got. So those are a couple ways. Peggy, I don't know if you had, I have other things I can talk about, but I didn't know if you had anything you wanted to wrap up or any other questions that came in.
We didn't have any other questions that came in, but yeah, you've talked a little bit about getting, you know, those indoor subjects outside. Do you have any specific examples that might get some parents' wheels thinking about how to translate what these topics that we tend to be very concrete and thinking about how they have to be taught to be a little more creative yeah. to get them outside?
Yeah, so I think your story hiking idea was great. A lot of times when we think of the subject of language arts, it's like this doom and gloom subject. Mm-hmm. Young kids, unless they're a miracle child, they hate them. Boys struggle a little bit more in this area. That's a lot of times where yeah. we think about mm-hmm. active learners. But language arts is like the furthest thing in my mind from anything you could do outdoors. But actually, there's a few ways you can do that. Number one, you could go on a walk and say, let's pick 10 things. What words are they? And then do a spelling quiz on them. So you see how you're crossing. You're saying uh-huh. we're doing spelling, but we're also saying, let's observe and, you know, be outdoors. So that's one example. Mm-hmm. I would say your idea, we've done versions of that where you go outside and you craft a story built on what you see and experience. Then you take them back inside, have them write out an outline of a story to practice your outlining if they're a little bit older, or maybe just a cool introduction if they're younger, and make them use something that they observe. And you could, you know, limit that or expand it as much as you want. Those are just a couple of ways when you say, well, how can I take something like language arts outside, outside. Those are always, and to take it outside doesn't mean it has to be finished outside. Adding a timer, a challenge, makes everything interesting. Uh-huh. So let's say you do a scavenger hunt, and you can do this online too. So this is a great way to get students investigating. So let's say you have a family computer and you've got to research a subject. Just let them let loose, of course, safely monitoring, but let them research and investigate. But you can do this outside. Say, you've got 15 minutes. Find everything you can, okay? They find the objects. They collect them. And then for art, draw the objects, okay? You can just draw them. I already used the spelling example. Writing, create a story out of these elements. Be figurative for older students. So when we're thinking high schoolers, what do these represent? Make these characters that represent something, okay? Younger learners, they would be more concrete. Okay? Mm-hmm. So those are ways when you add timers to things, That's going to make it exciting, maybe a little bit stressful for some perfectionist students, but that's actually good for them to be like, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect. So adding a timer changes everything. I finally, we couldn't get our kids to clean up, and we're pretty intentional, very firm parents is what I'll describe, and very intentional. Cleaning their room was very difficult. I got advice from my wise parents, and they said, hey, if you add a timer, it makes it a game. It makes it a challenge. Okay. And now they clean up. Suddenly my oldest son, who couldn't clean up to save his life, he loves cleaning up because he thinks it's a challenge now every time. So those are some simple ways that it doesn't take you being like Montessori genius number one with their awesome experience outside, which we love Montessori schools because of their experiences they offer. But you don't have to be an expert in Montessori experience offering. You don't have to be some researched up. You don't have to be Peggy. You can be you just sitting down and going, what are a few ways that we can change it? Those are some simple, simple ways. For high school students, I think older students, it's a little bit harder. So I wanted to think of a way, architecture. If you have a student that is math, loves math, loves engineering, or is artistic, architecture brings all those together. If you have a student that loves history, architecture is history. You can go explore the architecture of your town, of a big city that's nearby, or maybe just the old schoolhouse. You can then go to the schoolhouse, go to the building, get outside, tell them, hey, here are make 10 observations. Walk around the building for 20 minutes. You've got to at least come back with 10 things you noticed. Okay? Yeah. Then go back or right there in your car or right next to there. Say, hey, what are things you noticed? Let's go then learn about why they would have done this. Or maybe this is something new that was added on. The artistic student can draw and really get connected to the art of it. The history buff can be like, I want to research and see what happened at this schoolhouse. Why is this way? Why is that way? So those are just some examples that really hopefully equip you to be successful. And it's not, it doesn't take a PhD. It just takes strategy, strategizing what works for you.
I love that. And just bringing in some of those things for older students, because I think we focus a lot when we have younger students about getting them outside. And then the older students, well, they just really need to get that book work done, and so yes, they can learn outside, and that's kind of the beginning of some of probably the best projects that they can work on too, is because you're putting them in environments where there's real life scenarios, and as they become high schoolers, we want them to have more of those experiences. Because that's how they're going to interpret the world that they're going to be navigating on their own. So that's so important.
Exactly.
So thank you for pointing that out. So we've got 5 minutes. I would love for you to talk a little bit about Winter Promise and just how our viewers can connect with you there and what you offer. And just anything else you have to share about that.
So Winter Promise, we describe ourselves as a Charlotte Mason inspired curriculum. And so our foundational values are built on the idea of discovery, curiosity, and really allowing the student to discover in everything that they're doing. And we build that foundation on top of the multiple intelligences because we believe that every student is different. And so Winter Promise is built on those values, and we have we offer curriculum for kindergartners all the way up through high school. We have, I would say, a particularly effective and powerful curriculum for that K to 6th and 7th range. We found tons of just great feedback from our families. So we offer language arts that is presented. It's one thing that a lot of times what happens is curriculum really focuses on presentation, or they really focus on content. And what we want to do is marry that. You need great content, but you also need it to be presented in a way that engages children. So our language arts are great. Of course, people are going to be, of course, you're saying it's great. So check us out. We are perfect for families with multiple children because we can incorporate multiple children into one or two curriculum packages that makes it easy
Package
on you. We
deal.
equip you. Everything we do is open and go. So you don't have to prepare an hour and a half the night before to do your homeschooling. You're a parent. My goodness, you should be, I don't know, hanging out, watching some TV to rest for yourself at night, not preparing for the next day. So everything we do is open and go. We offer hands-on experiences, reading experiences, projects, activities. All of it is easy to accomplish, and we offer as much as we can so that students of all learning types are engaged, but you're not exhausted. You, the parent, can actually do it. So please connect with us. We have a Facebook page. We have Instagram page as well. We have a group called the Winter Promise Village, I think we called it. I'm blanking right now, but it's a group that you can join and get samples ahead of time, get advice directly from us, talk to other Winter Promise users. And if, hey, need free shipping or some percentage off, just reach out to Michael for winterpromise@gmail.com. I'll find you a way to make sure it can happen. So we'd love for you to find out about us. And, give us a call, email, whatever. Check us out at the link there, winterpromise.com. We'd love to serve your family.
Great. Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because for our podcast viewers, it is winterpromise.com. Just both those words put together. So yeah, definitely check out there. You have the cutest little website too. I mean, just all the characters, and it just made me happy when I pulled it up. So
it's in our curriculum too. So it's a small taste of what you can have.
Yeah, well, that's cool. Well, thank you so much, Michael. This was the icing on the cake for the month, because you just brought so much extra. You know, and I think we talked 4 weeks about something. We're like, oh, there can't be anything more. But you definitely brought some new and interesting things to this conversation, and hopefully a lot of encouragement. I definitely felt like that. It was a good way to end the month with what you had to share. So thank you so much for all the research you've done, and just for the heart that you shared with us about outdoor learning.
Well, it was a pleasure to be on. So any way that we can help, as Peggy, you clearly do, you have a heart for helping people help their kids. And that's right at the center of what we want to. So thank you for having me.
Yeah. Well, it was a great conversation, and just thank you all for joining us for that. And so next week we are going to launch our June topic, which is character training and child behavior. And we're going to be focusing in on that all month. So we've got a variety of different guests that'll be coming on, talking different angles about that. Also, all of our articles, if you don't know, our new articles every week that come out on Wednesdays are related to the same topic. And so today we put out our favorite. Actually, have you ever done like a progressive dinner? We did a progressive park day. So the blog that came out today was how to go from packing your picnic to getting outside, doing large motor activities to fine motor activities, even to the audiobooks you can take on your car ride home. So you definitely want to check that out.
Wow.
We want to be able to help you, like Michael was saying, just not make it too difficult so that you just say, oh, I can't do that. So we want to give you the resources to help you with getting outside. But next week, my guest is going to be Marcy Melzer, and she's going to talk about how to calm kids and overcome tantrums for good. Can't wait to hear this one. Probably wished I had it long time ago, but I'm excited for what she has to share. So definitely come back and join us next week for that topic. But thanks for joining us tonight. And thank you again, Michael, for all that you had to share. Definitely check out his website at winterpromise.com and see if that might be a good fit for your family. And we didn't have a sponsor tonight, but I do want to let you know that we are a nonprofit here at Sped Homeschool. And so any donation that you make, our broadcasts that are done without sponsors are sponsored by donors and viewers like you. So you can check out our website and find different ways that we take donations, and they are tax deductible. So thanks, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll see you next Tuesday night again at 8 Central for another episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. Bye, everyone.
Finding uplifting news in today's headlines is often like searching for a needle in a haystack. At the Story Behind podcast, we believe in the power of finding heartwarming tales and are happy to share empowering stories with you every week. Get inspired by the note a waitress received from a patron dining alone. And even hear about how one VIP passenger made a hardworking pilot get emotional before his flight. To start listening to the Story Behind podcast, visit lifeaudio.com